Hello everyone, hello football fans around the world. Welcome to the Squawker Talker. Once again, it's Monday and we have an astonishing amount of football to cover. 32 goals in the Premier League, no less. I'm joined today by Felix Keith. Hello, Felix.
Hello.
How's it going?
Yeah, very well, thank you.
That's excellent news. Also joining us is Greg Johnson. Hello, Greg.
Hi, Nick.
Just before we came on air, you were saying that you went to see the wrestling yesterday.
Oh, I did. It was really good.
Yeah?
I might become a wrestler.
Okay, that could be good. Yeah. And also joining us is Natasha Henry. Hello, Natasha.
Hi, you're right.
How you doing?
I'm not too bad. I'm just laughing at Greg's face while he talks about wrestling.
He looks genuinely really keen
He's
to
like
become
a
wrestler.
He's like a kid at Christmas.
I'm infused. That's it.
Infused. There's lots to talk about. Let's start with probably the biggest result of the weekend. Arsenal 3, Chelsea 0. Natasha, great result for Wenger, given that they hadn't scored against Chelsea for six league games. What impressed you most about the day? Who impressed you the most?
Oh, God, where'd you start? I think the whole performance was impressive. Let's not deny Chelsea weren't as good as they have been in previous seasons. Mm-hmm. Their defence is, not a defence, basically. But I just think the whole kind of... Everyone goes on about the mental state of Arsenal. That clearly was not a problem this weekend. They looked confident. Sanchez was just running things. I mean, Ozil's turn on Kante, Bellerin's tackle on Pedro, where he just found this extra, millimetres of pace. As an Arsenal fan, it was great.
Yeah, I can imagine. I mean, Greg, it's obvious this Chelsea squad has a lot of issues, especially at the back. I mean, Conte's known for building defensive rigidity, but he can't do much when the players keep making such basic errors, can he?
Mm. Well, you always say a bad workman blames his tools, but this guy hasn't even got any tools. Like, he's looked in his toolbox and gone...
And in the postman press conference, he wasn't even blaming them, which is amazing, given how poor Gary Cahill was.
I think Natasha's just summed it up. He doesn't have a defence. Like, how can he build one when he doesn't have a defence to build? You know what I mean? Even Azpilicueta is looking faulty. I mean, Gary Cahill was not fit for purpose. David Luiz was sick from the list. Yeah, well, he was David Luiz. But at the same time, he was their big marquee sign at the back. And, mm-hmm. Conte was looking to get a few more in. And he was seventh, eighth, sixth or something on their list of priorities. So, yeah, it's been a really bad summer for Chelsea in defence.
Really bad. And a lot of the fans, Felix, are feeling a bit worried about it. I mean, there was a bit in the Times this morning pointing out that Michael Oliver tracked Ozil back quicker than N'Golo Kante. He looked a shadow of his former self yesterday. He didn't seem to be really that energetic. It seems a sort of dispirited squad, doesn't it?
I think it must be stark contrast, though, to what it was like at Leicester for him, where they were all one big unit, so well drilled. He played next to the same players every week. Mm. And yesterday he was just chasing shadows. But I think I don't feel sorry for Conte in the transfer window. He had all summer to sort out what he wanted. He basically failed on every front in the transfer window. They were aggressively pursuing Koulibaly of Napoli and just basically failed to get that sorted and ended up last day trolley dash for David Luiz. Mm. Didn't sort out Ivanovic and Cahill, Terry. They're all aging. That's been a problem for a while. He must have known that. And he's ended up basically not really sorting it. And that was there to see there and against Liverpool previous game.
I think that's a little bit unfair because, he did see the problems. I think the problem is that at Chelsea, the manager doesn't complete the signings. He says who he wants. Mm. And then basically the guys who go out there and actually seal the deals completely just let him down. Mm. At the start of the season, he basically said exactly who he wanted. Okay, Bonucci was a bit out there, but Koulibaly was much more kind of achievable. And Chelsea just kind of dragged their heels and didn't really get on with it. And he was getting more frustrated by the summer as the summer went on as well. Like, he even said in some press conferences, what can I do? This is not my... He didn't say in so many words, not my fault, but he definitely inferred that he was very frustrated with the club and how they were going about things.
I can't help but think, for the first time in my life, I may feel a little sorry for Jose Mourinho, because we heard him moaning about their lack of business last summer, and we thought, oh, it's just Jose moaning and, using excuses. Yeah. But you have to wonder what's going on at the club. Has it got to a point where Roman is bored and doesn't want to spend the money? And, you're not going to wave a magic wand. Pep Guardiola could go there and that defence would still be awful. Mm. So you have to wonder why they're not bringing in the players that obviously need replacing. Not to mention they have quite a few reasonably capable defenders out on loan. But, that's a whole other podcast for another situation.
A whole other podcast. Let's talk quickly. I mean, the only bad news from an Arsenal point of view on the day was the injury to Francis Coquelin. It looks probably like a recurrence of the injury he suffered last season, which kept him out for almost half the term. But this season it doesn't seem to be so bad because it's almost a blessing in disguise, which means that Granit Xhaka is going to be starting a lot, doesn't it?
Yeah, I hate to be happy someone's injured, which obviously I'm not. But, you know, if it means that Granit will be in the starting lineup a lot sooner than Wenger would have liked him to be, then I think that's a great thing. If he's talking about he needs to adapt to the Premier League and get used to playing alongside Cazorla, then the only way he can do that is by playing games. Obviously, he's going to be playing against his brother in midweek, which should be very interesting. Mm. But I think we see when he comes on the pitch, he's confident, he's strong, and he doesn't take time to get into the game. He's straight away up to that level. So, yeah, I think for once, it kind of feels like an exciting time, even though I just had no expectations from Arsenal this season.
Felix, Natasha mentioned the midweek game. Probably the best news for Arsenal is that Mesut Ozil's finally firing. I mean, he's had a bit of a slow start to the season, but he looked really, really good against Chelsea. He's been involved in more Premier League goals than any other Arsenal player, assists and goals since the start of last season. And it looks like Arsenal are finally, you know, they've got their season kick-started and they can really, you know, get going, as it were.
Yeah, like you say, I think the confidence is a big thing. I think also that the pressure's not solely on him. You've got either side. Alex Iwobi's been chipping in. He's got 3 Premier League assists playing off the left-hand side. Mm-hmm. Theo Walcott, he's got a goal. He's certainly confident. And then Sanchez dropping deep, playing. There's a lot of movement. So I think it's helped Ozil get up to speed that he's obviously still the main creator, but he hasn't been. There's not really much pressure on him. He's had time to get back to it after the European Championships. And yeah. Obviously, if he's going to be playing to his full potential, then Arsenal should really continue this form.
Oh, fair enough. Let's move on. Let's talk a bit about Manchester United rampaging first half of football against Leicester City. Greg, we're going to have to come to you because end of days, end of Wayne's. Wayne Rooney was dropped. Occam's razor sort of came true. You know, if the solution is that obvious, then it's probably that solution. Mm. Wayne Rooney was dropped. Man United looked unbelievably fluid. Zlatan dropping into space. Pogba rushing on. Mm. And they got 4 first half goals. I mean, was it really that simple all along?
Yeah, I think against like teams that are not as not as good at controlling games from deep. Yeah, definitely. But I still maintain Mourinho might run into problems against sides like City again. Mm. Next day comes up against him because as much as it was great seeing guys like Pogba unleashed up on Leicester, which they were, and the extra room having taken Rooney out of the team and having Mata as a much more fluid, floaty presence, basically opening up space for people to run into was great, but still very reliant on individuals. And I do wonder when I do wonder when they come up against better teams, they might still come unstuck a little bit.
Mm. Natasha, I mean, poor Pogba looked great. He actually got given the Man of the Match award. Even though he's playing in a 2, he looked to dominate the midfield. You know, a lot of players impressed. Who really caught your eye in that fixture?
I think you kind of have to say Daley Blind. I mean, he's took a lot of grief, but obviously Mata said yesterday it's something they've been practicing in training. You know, they have a lot of tall players, but I think one of the things we've seen in the Premier League over the past 5 years is really bad corners. It's like people can't even beat the first man anymore. Mm. So to produce 3 that create goals is quite an achievement these days. I mean, we've watched Theo Walcott for years not even get to the box with his corners. So, you know, to actually get it right where it needs to be, someone can score, someone can knock it down to score, I think is a really good skill to have.
And delivery for like Chris Smalling's goal was
unreal.
Yeah. Is it kind of like it went up right in the end and vertically came down and there was no way the defenders were going to get anywhere near it. It was pinpoint.
It doesn't just curve, it dips and it swerves. Felix, any real players catch your eye in that game? Because United just looks so impressive.
Yeah, I think the other obvious one is Ander Herrera came in for Marouane Fellaini. It's just basically an audition. Go and make that place your own. And yeah, he had a good game, basically. He's just as mobile as Pogba. And you think they might have a problem of who goes and who stays. But he's just very versatile. He's comfortable dropping deep, playing the defensive role, but he's also capable of driving the team forward, playing those intricate passes. And yeah, I mean, obviously Leicester weren't great and their midfield 2 of Drinkwater and Amate didn't really offer much threat, but I thought Herrera certainly did as much as he could have done.
Yeah, Leicester look really fragile, don't they, Greg? Mm. I mean, especially at the back, it looks like Huth and Morgan have no idea who they are. I mean, Morgan only completed 3 passes in the first half. He's used to spreading it out wide, you know, to the fullbacks and having real control at the back. But they look totally, totally, well, I don't know, afraid, yeah. I guess, of the Man United onslaught.
Yeah, and there's a couple of times when they ran into each other chasing the same ball and things. It was just a very out of character performance for the entirety of that back line that looked so kind of on the same level last season. And yeah, they're going to have to sort themselves out quickly, because the problem with Leicester is at the back, like, they haven't really invested in any new defenders to really, you know, shape up that that back line. Everyone said it was going to be a weakness in the Champions League. Luckily, so far, they've done all right. But yeah, if they can't get their heads in gear, then they're going to be in serious trouble this season.
Yeah, and Natasha, after the game, Ranieri explained that he subbed off Mahrez and Vardy, who, between them, you know, only contributed zero shots, zero goals, zero assists, and zero take-ons. It was a fairly inept performance from their two-star players. He explained that he'd sub them off to rest them for the midweek game versus Porto. Do you believe that, or was it a statement?
I mean, I've never been a fan of this kind of giving up a game. Like, I hate to see fans leave before the final whistle, because I think you never know what's going to happen. And this is the Premier League, and yes, man, you were 4-0 up, but that doesn't mean that you can't go and score 2-3 goals and actually give them a competition. But if you take off your two main men, that makes it harder. But I think Ranieri's got to take a lot of responsibility. I know he gave the players a lot of time off in the close season. Wes Morgan didn't come back till the week before the Premier League started. And I definitely feel that kind of lack of training, lack of fitness is now going to hamper them, because that was their strength last season. Mm. Without that, they seem to be struggling.
Well, they were obviously very impressive on their Champions League debut, Markel Brighton and all that. It was a great start. So, I mean, on paper, it looks a very difficult game. But, I mean, he's rested two of his two best players from there. And they've got more going forward. They've, as you were saying, they haven't invested in the defence. But now they've got Slimani and Musa. There's options up front. They're dangerous enough. So we just have to wait and see. I think it's still a bit untried ground. So.
And Ranieri himself has said that, you know, it's probably better just to go for the Champions League than it is to try and get top four again. It's unrealistic. And if they win tonight, that's 6 points. They're pretty much two-thirds of the way there in terms of the points that you need at the Champions League nowadays. Let's talk a little bit about Liverpool, probably the form team in the league right now. 5-1 versus Hull City, Greg. Unbelievable performance. Jurgen Klopp's Liverpool have arrived, haven't they?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I mean, they just look absolutely unstoppable. I think they created the most chances as well in the Premier League. And yeah, I mean, all the kind of individual errors that were kind of in that side going back a season or so ago, they've all kind of been cured now. Like, Firmino looks fantastic. Coutinho is a guy who's got quality as well as quantity now. He used to be this ball hog who just took too many shots and was a bit selfish, whereas he set Lallana up for the goal to get them on their way at the weekend and just looked really good. His decision-making was fantastic. He's actually taking more shots than ever in a Liverpool shirt these days, but he just seems to be getting more of them on target and just picking his spots better. And it's, yeah, you can just see the difference. They look both individually and collectively just terrifying at the moment. Yeah,
Natasha, Liverpool created 6 more chances than any other Premier League team this weekend. It was just non-stop attack from start to finish. Obviously, Hull, not the greatest team in the league, but what's Klopp done that all of a sudden has made them just sort of switch into this attacking force?
I feel like he's given them a bit of focus. I think it sounds silly, but I think a lot of teams you see have no organisation. People don't know what they should be doing. Like you're saying about Coutinho, you know, he was taking these wild shots and we're all thinking, why are you doing that? It's probably that Klopp said to him, okay, yeah, you can take those shots when you're in that area, when the team's in this position or this kind of setup. I think when you give football players who are not always the brightest knives in the drawer, brightest knives in the drawer, stars in the sky.
Mixed idioms, yeah. All over the shop.
yeah, but you give them strict instructions or basic instructions, they will follow them. Mm. And it's obviously working for Liverpool. And now they might have a decent keeper. It'll be easy. It'll be interesting to see, you know, whether they really do start winning games comprehensively.
I think Sadio Mane as well needs to get a big shout for why players like Coutinho are doing so well now. Because in the past, when Liverpool just weren't really moving fluidly enough in the final third, players like Coutinho would just find themselves without many options and just kind of almost out of frustration, try a 50-yard shot, and it'd be ridiculous. But now with Mane, like, Liverpool's opponents are always having to move around to kind of react to his runs, react to his movement, and it's just opening up the attack for all the rest of Klopp's players, and it works so well. Even the midfielders are coming into play as well, coming from deep, and James Milner looks reborn as a left back. So yeah, it's looking really good for Liverpool.
He's always been the sort of player, though. I mean, you could put him in goal and he would give you a 7 out of 10 performance, whatever he does. You know, he may not be the greatest at what he does, but he will always try to be as good as he can. I think, you know, sometimes some players don't have that kind of skill.
Yorkshire's John O'Shea, that's what he is.
Yes, once described by Alan Smith as the thickest neck in football, and from yeah. Alan Smith, that's hella praise.
His head is huge, and it's very square.
It's enormously square. It is
action man-esque.
It's basically an oblong. Felix, I mean, Greg mentioned the midfield there. Probably one midfielder that has been standing out for Liverpool recently is Jordan Henderson, captain. Really struggled to make his mark last season, but Klopp seems to have solved the problem. Jordan Henderson completed more passes than any other Premier League player this weekend, and he looks to be really bossing the midfield area for Liverpool, something that he was totally incapable of doing last season. How's Klopp turned this around?
I think it's certainly impressive, yeah, because Henderson was this, back when Gerrard was still there, he was just this sidekick that would kind of be there, but he's taking charge of the
sidekick.
Well, he is. When you're playing alongside Steven Gerrard, yeah.
Do you know what? He was Gerrard's portable battery pack.
Oh. Yeah, now, yeah. Anyway, yeah. Now, let's focus on the positives. Henderson now, like you say, he's playing. If you look at the team sheet, you think, God, that looks open. You've got Wijnaldum next to him, who's more comfortable going forward. Mm-hmm. Henderson's never been noted as a defensive midfielder, and yet somehow it's all clicking into gear. I think it's the system, the pressing system suits him. He's very fit, and he can get about the pitch. He's never had a problem with that. I think he's been given responsibility, and yeah, he's taken it on board. I think with Liverpool, it's notable the comparison with Klopp's Dortmund side. With the three interchanging behind the striker with Royce, Mkhitaryan, Goetze. You've now got Lallana, Coutinho and Mane. It's that similar kind of mobile. They're all happy to press. They're all happy to chase the ball. And I think if everyone's in the same mould, they all know what they're doing, then it's worked really well. And with Henderson, that means if he's not left one-on-one with the other team breaking, basically if the other team can't break the Liverpool press, then it's all working perfectly. Everyone's in the right position. So I think Klopp has to take all the credit, really.
Klopp takes all the credit. Greg, is it worth saying anything? Quick few words about Hull. Sorry, I made it sound like you're going to recite a eulogy for Hull City, but the honeymoon period's over, isn't it? They're starting to lose games, and they're looking a bit out of their depth, aren't they?
Yeah, I don't think Mike Phelan was ever under any illusions that this wasn't the way it was going to go. It's like, oh, bank a few points now, and then might survive end of the season. I think the main problem is he's wearing a suit and he's not wearing his fantastic short collection, which he's. Yeah, he's also sported very well in the past for Man United on the bench.
He has some very strong calves.
He does. So I think
Alan Smith has noted that he has the best calves.
Absolutely.
In there.
Absolutely. He's got the brightest knives in the drawer. I think, when the dark winter nights come and Phelan's there with his shorts on, proving to the players that he's got the commitment to keep them up, then, you know, yeah. They'll follow suit. It'll be fine. The Tigers will bear their claws. How many more cliches do you want, lads?
We're here all night.
Yeah, no, they're going down. They're totally going down.
But then, do you know what? I feel like their fans, even if they get relegated, which they probably will, as long as they keep showing the commitment that they're showing, their fans will accept that because they know it's not the players' fault that there isn't enough players, you know? Yeah.
But the players are putting in a shift. There's no two ways about it.
But it's law of attrition, isn't it? They can't keep putting a shift. Well, Leicester did last season, so what am I talking about? They're going to win
the league. Yeah, but they actually had a squad of players rather than 12 men and 3 boys.
Yeah. Let's talk about Spurs. 2-1 versus Middlesbrough away. A very Pochettino-esque Spurs performance, wasn't it, Natasha? Just battering a team into submission with physicality, sharp movement of the ball, and you know, tactical flexibility. The Spurs are second in the league. Same goal difference as Liverpool, who apparently have scored a million goals, and they found a way to score without Kane. They're looking really good again, aren't they?
Yeah, they are looking good, but then they'll go and do something really Spursy and then we'll have a discussion about what happened to Spurs. No, I mean, going up to Middlesbrough, you would expect them to get the win, you know, and the Kane injury is going to be interesting. Yeah, everything's rosy now because someone else is scoring, but long term, will they manage without him? Because even when he was playing but wasn't scoring, they were struggling to win games. Mm. So you do have to wonder how long Song or Jansen will be able to cope without him.
Mm. Felix, I mean, Spurs, just they keep signing contracts for their players. Mm. They've solidified the squad. They've got this squad seemingly together. They're not going to be leaving for 2 or 3 seasons. It looks like they're good enough to get a top 4 place for a very, very long time. This feels like what we were predicting last season, this is the sort of start of an era for Spurs, doesn't it?
Yeah, their squad looks very impressive. The midfield is obviously the strength, especially with now Kane injured. Got Janssen up there. It's a different kind. I think they'll have to change their dynamic a bit. But it looked like yesterday, on Saturday, sorry, that it will work with Janssen because you can just play him, basically bounce the balls off him, like use him as... They use him as like a staging post and for all the running, the midfielders running on. So you've got Son, obviously, on fire. And he got a layoff from him, scored. They've got Eriksen, Ali, Lamella. Those are that's their strength there. So if you can use Janssen as like a hold-up kind of play, that almost accentuates their strength. Obviously, you'd prefer Harry Kane. But I think if they can make that work, which they seem to be, they can just keep it going.
Yeah, Greg, I mean, Heung-min Son, last season he really struggled to, you know, get any sort of foothold in the team, but this season he's just flying, and Pochettino had to convince him to stay, didn't he?
Yeah, something like it takes a season for a player to kind of get to grips with the league, which is a bit awkward in a game where patience is, you know, never been shorter and people expect things to happen overnight. But he looks fantastic. He looks as good as he ever did in the Bundesliga now. Like, he's creating and scoring goals, he's taking people on. Not always winning, always take-ons, but at least he's trying. That kind of unsettles defences, and it kind of gives his teammates a chance to kind of jump in there and finish off the job that he starts, even if he can't do it himself. So, yeah, we've often said, like, Spurs have missed a game-changer, out wide especially, and everyone, they didn't sign one this summer. Well, they signed one last summer, and it's Son, and he's kind of finally showing it.
Yeah, I do kind of think the one worry you have for them is that they don't have a big group of players that score. So, you know, you look at Arsenal, you look at City... Even Liverpool, you know, there's 6-7 players that can get you a goal. I definitely think their midfielders have to come up with a lot more goals than they have. Otherwise, you know, the Kane injury could come back to haunt them.
To be fair, Dele Alli hasn't really kicked on either yet. So you've kind of got him to come into form as well. So, I mean, it hasn't quite been the perfect start for Spurs, but it never is under Pochettino. You know, he tends to start slowly each season. But they've got all their kind of best players still to come online, really. So yeah.
And they're second.
Yeah, so watch this space.
They're in the second behind Man City, who've 6 from 6, hitting everyone for 6. Pep Guardiola is only the second ever manager to do that, have a 6 games, 100% start the season, in their first season. It's... Carlo Ancelotti was the other one, 2009. Man City and Pep Guardiola, Felix, thoughts? It looks pretty terrifying, doesn't it, for the rest of the league?
Yeah, it's that kind of just machine just keeps rumbling on. But everyone just, again, it's great management, it seems. Everyone in the right positions, everyone knows their roles. Like, they were Nolito suspended. You wouldn't have noticed watching them. I think David Silva is going to be a big player now with Kevin De Bruyne injured.
Yes, Kevin De Bruyne out for 4 weeks, apparently. No, only Messi has more assists, Greg, over Europe's top 5 leagues than Kevin De Bruyne since 2014-15. Kevin De Bruyne got 33. That's a big, big miss because he's been instrumental to Guardiola's early season form for City, at least.
Yeah, absolutely. But it almost kind of, there's a silver lining that it could solve another one of City's frustrations, if not the problems, which is how to play Iheanacho and Aguero together.
Could be fun.
It could be, yeah. So you could replace De Bruyne with Iheanacho, a very different player. But I think that could work in Pep's system. I mean, you've got guys like Nolito and Sterling out wide to kind of hold up the ball and do wonderful things with it. If you have another presence up there, I mean, Iheanacho is a very talented, very complete footballer. He can play outside the box as well as inside it. So he could play behind the strikers. Silva has been looking fantastic as a midfielder. He's almost done the Cazorla thing of being tiny and not looking like he's got the power to take on midfielders in the end, just bossing it. Like, he was all over Pogba in the Manchester derby, and he looked like, you know, nothing fazed him. And it doesn't matter how strong or how strong he isn't. He looks fantastic in midfield. So, yeah, I mean, last season, losing De Bruyne saw the wheels come off Pellegrini's team. But Pellegrini was so much more reliant on the individuals and not the system that he built. With Pep, I back Pep to find a way, basically. He'll do it. Be fine.
Natasha, Swansea having some problems at the moment. It's well rumoured that Francesco Guidolin is on the way out and potentially Ryan Giggs.
Give it Giggsy till the end of the season.
Give it Giggsy to the end of the season. Andy Tate must be absolutely loving this. Is the fix for Swansea changing their manager? It doesn't look like it on paper, does it?
I mean, I always felt they should have never really got rid of Gary Monk. For a club that for so long was about stability and consistency, when they sacked him, it just felt really out of character. And yeah, they weren't doing great at the time, but I still believe he would have kept them up. I think they've brought in a man now who openly doesn't really know the Premier League, who hasn't spent a lot of money. And I think once they lose Sigurdsson, which they probably will in January, then you're really going to look at them and think, okay, so no Ashley Williams, no Sigurdsson. Where are the goals coming from? Who's creating? Who's organising the defence? I don't know that changing the manager is the best idea, because who are they going to employ? Steve Bruce, maybe, but would he take the job?
Would Ryan Giggs do a good job?
I think the other problem is now, well, Swansea are losing what they're about. Like, what everyone loved about Swansea is that they came up through leagues playing a very specific brand of football, added to the variety of the Premier League, playing this possession style of play, and it was fantastic. And it wasn't never going to probably win them the league, but they were a real asset to the Premier League. And it's kind of a shame that before they even think about losing a manager, they've already started to lose their identity. And I think that maybe that's the biggest tragedy of all. Maybe.
Yeah. Well, as long as Ki Sung Young stays at Swansea, that brand of football will always be staying there.
Well, as long as he stays in the Premier League, he's a wonderful footballer. We can't lose him.
Well, almost underrated. Mm. So slow, though.
But quick of mind.
So sleight of hand.
Mm.
It's now that time of the week where it's Felix Keith's time to shine. We're going to be talking about West Ham versus Southampton.
Oh.
Felix, big Charlie Austin doing the business for you.
Yeah, 5 goals in 4 games, basically.
Stone cold.
Since he's come into the team, it's been the biggest change. So Southampton have now won 4 on the bounce in all competitions, 4 clean sheets, which is mainly to do with Van Dijk and Fonte, but Austin up front has basically changed. The diamond system's now working very well. We've got Tadic creating in the creative role, but it's basically Austin being able to finish where Shane Long couldn't. Shane Long was in the system, Ronald Koeman's system before, likes chasing the ball, works very hard for the team, but he scored 10 goals last season, and that's his most he's ever managed in a campaign. Charlie Austin, by contrast, doesn't run as much, as we saw yesterday. Before he got taken off, he's completely gone. But he's just a classic penalty box striker. If you get the ball into him, the chances are he'll score. Just showed in the first half, Southampton against West Ham, 1 shot on target, 1 goal. And then once West Ham just fell to pieces, you had Tadic and Redmond floating around creating stuff. And Austin, he looks brilliant. And the confidence is such now that you saw him play an assist for Tadic with a little touch around the corner on his left foot.
Lovely little pass,
and he just looks full of confidence. And I think fitness has always been the problem for him. Saints signed him in January basically to preemptively replace Graziano Pella, who left to China. And now if he is fit, which he must be if he's playing this well, I think he's going to be a real asset, and I'm sure he's going to score a lot more goals because he looks great.
It's been Saints are now 8th. It's been a bit of a long time coming, this upturn in results, because Southampton have been playing quite well, actually, this season. I remember watching them against Arsenal, and they completely bossed it for the first half hour. They were quite unlucky to lose that game in the end.
Yeah, it's basically the Claude Puel style seems to be. He's obviously a disciple of Arsene Wenger. He's playing this 4-4-2 diamond, which I think just took a long time for the players to get used to. They played 4-2-3-1 under Koeman. They'd occasionally play 3 at the back. Now they've got this diamond system. They got it down. Pierre Højbjerg looks excellent on the right-hand side. They had Stephen Davis distributing the ball. I think basically it's just taken a while to click into gear. But the main thing is Austin, because they were playing really well at the start of the season. Draws against Sunderland and Watford just wasn't good enough. But they basically were just missing that killer instinct, that one touch in front of goal. Mm. And now they've got that. They look, the side yesterday seemed like on paper the strongest side they can put out. So it all looks very rosy, yeah.
Look very rosy. Natasha, what on earth is wrong with West Ham? There's so much wrong with the club, but let's talk about on the pitch specifically.
So we've created a new word in the office. So Spurs are Spursy. West Ham are very hammy right now.
Very hammy.
Very hammy.
Extra hammy.
Hammer horror.
Hammer.
Ooh. Ooh, very good, Greg. I don't even know where to start. I think...
Well, let's start with the defence. They've got the leakiest defence in the league now. Yeah. They concede the most goals.
And if they didn't have a decent goalkeeper, how many more goals would they be conceding? That's a serious worry. Mark Noble yesterday in his post-match interview, I was waiting for him to cry. He looks
upset.
Upset? That's an understatement. I'm upset when I break a nail. He looked like someone had kicked his cat. You know, he was really emotional and very honest, which I respect, but... I don't know if it's the stadium. I think it's very easy to blame the stadium. I don't think they should be there in the first place. But, you know, I just feel like, was last season a one-season wonder? And they rely too much on individual players for me. if Payet is not getting a free kick within 30 yards from the box, they're not scoring. And that's a big concern. I mean, Andy Carroll is always injured. So why would you think about creating a team around a man that is very rarely fit for half a season? I don't know. There's just so much wrong with them right now.
There's a lot wrong.
There's so much wrong with them.
There's a lot wrong. I mean, Natasha mentioned the Dimitri Payet, the Andy Carroll issue, Greg. It just looks like it's all wrong. But this is, Bilic has previous for this, is teams tend to start very, very well and then fall off quite dramatically, don't they?
Yeah, why has he not signed any defenders? Let James Tompkins go in. They've got no cover at the back. It reminds me of like a club, it might be Bilic, but it also reminds me of a club kind of getting stars in their eyes and thinking, oh, we'll just sign all the best players. It reminds me a lot of when Hull City went down, actually. After they had that season, they thought, we'll consolidate by buying all the best players we can possibly get. Not thinking about how it'll balance, not thinking about how it'll fit together. And West Ham have bought in loads of attacking players this summer, but they're not all going to play together. And also, who's going to do the work for them behind?
They've bought names as opposed to players.
Yeah.
I mean, I still don't know why, but they bought Zaza. I mean, that penalty alone means he should never be allowed on a football pitch again. But it does feel like...
Brutal.
You know, sorry, you're not on the
keep
list.
Keep it real. but yeah, I feel like they've bought names instead of players. And this whole West Ham way that they all preach about, where's the West Ham way now? Because I don't see anyone coming through from your academy.
The injuries as well. I mean, defensively, like, I take the point with all the attacking players. Jonathan Cagliari has done nothing. Gokantore, Fuguli, all these players, not one of them has done anything yet. But the two left-backs, they were Cresswell injured, then Masuaka injured. And they had to play Alvaro Arbeloa yesterday, and he just, oh my God.
He was not great.
He looked older than he even is.
Mascot
and,
levels.
And he's playing at left back, and he must have been thinking, what happened? Why am I here? And then at right back, they were playing Nordvald instead of a right back. They got Sam Byram. They just didn't play him.
Nordvald is a centre mid.
Or a centre, yeah.
Ed, what has Byram done to Bilic? No. Because he clearly is not his friend. I mean, he was playing Antonio there a couple of weeks ago. You've got someone, and that's their position, yet you choose everyone else but him to play there. Well, no logic.
So we asked the question, what's going on at West Ham? We have about 17 million answers, and we'll welcome yours as well, answers on a postcard. Or a tweet. Yeah, that's a much easier way of getting in touch with us. At
Down with
Squawker.
The kids.
Down with the kids. Three Premier League games left to cover. The time is against us. There's so much football this weekend and so many goals to analyse. Sunderland 2, Crystal Palace 3, Stoke City 1, West Brom 1, Bournemouth 1, Everton 0. General thoughts. I will take a panel of thoughts from those three games. Felix Stein,
I think you've got to start with David Moyes chucking it away. 2-0 up at home to Crystal Palace, who have not been a good away side. And then they just imploded. And then you let Christian Benteke have a free header from 6 yards out. Just that they deserve what's coming to them.
Papi Djilobodji has to be the worst centre-back in the Premier League for some time.
I've watched him a few times this season. He can jump and head, and that's kind of that. But okay, he didn't even do that then. So, yeah, that was that's awful.
Okay. I don't know if this tells a story in itself, but Duncan Watmore, their you know, formerly rampaging winger, had a higher performance score for his defending than his attacking or ball possession, which seems very Moisean to me.
Yeah, very Moisean. Yeah. Natasha, thoughts on those last three games? Anything stick out at you?
Everton need to get some consistency soon. I think they play really well, and then the next game they lose 1-0 to Bournemouth. Good to see Jack Wilshere had a good game. But yeah, David Moyes and Everton, I feel like he's thrown in the towel. I mean, it was always going to be a struggle to
Moyes at
David,
Sunderland.
Yeah.
Oh dear.
It still feels wrong that it's he's right. not Mo- at Everton.
Moyes still thinks he's at Everton. This is the problem. So it's completely understandable.
Stephen Pienaar.
Yeah. He's done a Harry Redknapp, hasn't he? Yeah. But yeah,
Stephen, you're 21 years old. Not anymore, mate.
I do feel like they've already thrown in the towel, and I think that sort of mentality within a football club is just going to breed defeat and disappointment. And Jermaine Defoe needs to get out of there in January.
Jermaine Defoe needs to exit. Fantastic.
Did well for the fantasy team this week, though.
Yeah.
They won't score without him, so they'll just go down quicker, you know. Pain will be over by March.
The only positive for Stoke 1, West Brom 1 is that neither Pulis nor Hughes got sacked. So I guess that's the only thing that those two can take out.
Stoke have stemmed the bleeding.
Stemmed the bleeding.
Because they were previously conceding more goals than only Man City were scoring more goals per game than Man City were conceding per game.
And they've been scoring a lot of goals per game.
Yeah.
Impressive.
Yeah. And so have Liverpool. And that's how badly Stoke were bleeding out. And they've stemmed the bleeding. Stemmed the bleeding.
I don't think he'll get sacked, though.
No.
No.
You know, they have more points at this point of the season than they did at this point last season as well. So Stoke are actually doing better than they did last year, which kind of sums up how badly they were doing last season. So,
start off with. We've got a new feature now.
Ooh.
It's always exciting to start a new feature, and it's highly original. It's Player of the Week. So we're going to be asking all of the panel for their Player of the Week. It doesn't have to be about any of the games that we're talking about, just who is your Player of the Week? Felix, I'm going to come to you first. Who's your Player of the Week and why?
So I've gone for Iago Falque. So he's on loan from Roma at Torino, and they played this weekend, and obviously the narrative dictates that he has to then score. But not only did he scored twice, the two winning goals, if you like. And then he celebrated in front of his old team after Totti. It was all meant to be about Totti. Mm. Stole the show. So he's been started at Barca, played for Juve, played for Spurs, been on loan here, there and everywhere. And at 26, he's now, it's just a nice story against his parent club. He wins. So, and yeah, obviously helping Joe Hart out as well.
Yeah,
because the English media can then go, Joe Hart made three saves as Torino won.
Well, he did make a couple of smart saves.
So that was a nice story.
Torino are excellent. Greg, who's your player of the weekend?
Well, I was going to go Belotti for Torino, but I decided against it because our old friend, Pierre Nocisto, had a great game for Celta Vigo. Yeah, people might remember him as the man who put United to the sword in the first leg of their loss. Their first leg loss to Michelin last season in the Europa League.
Southampton. New Europa League.
Yeah, he's pretty good on the ball when he wants to be. He did 8 take-ons, completed only 5, but you know it was enough. He put the willies into Espanyol's defence. And the 1-2-0 in the end with 2 extra time goals. First one from Giuseppe Rossi, but the highlight was Sisto's goal. He got the ball inside his own area, drove forward. Espanyol were backing off, going, "What's this guy going to do?" And he did exactly what they thought he was going to do. Scored a goal from outside the box. It was wonderful. Go and watch it on YouTube, or if the rights allow you to. But yeah, it's good.
But there are other streaming sites.
Other streaming sites and illegal download places are available.
Yes, as has been well noted in the media this week. Natasha, who's your player of the weekend?
I'm going for Charlie Austin,
the big man.
Not as exciting as what Felix and Greg picked, but I just think the boy clearly can't run. He can't.
Stop the negative. Build it back up again.
Yeah, it's like a poo sandwich, isn't it? good, bad, good is what I mean. So he can't run. You know, he's never gonna have tricks and flicks, but he does what he says on the tin. And I think in a world where players are very expensive, overpriced, and think they're better than they are, it's just simple. You give him the ball, he scores. It's that simple. And sometimes we need a bit of simplicity in this world.
Okay. I'm looking forward to going to the supermarket and asking for a tin of Charlie Austin.
Or a poo sandwich, for that matter.
Or a poo sandwich, from the deli counter. Burnley-Watford is tonight. Burnley-Watford is
tonight. Oh, dear.
More Premier League action tonight. Burnley versus Watford. Felix. I mean, there's really not much to say about Burnley versus Watford.
Well,
without any disrespect to the two clubs,
I think the only thing anyone's going to be looking out for is whether Etienne Capoue scores again.
Mm.
I mean, Burnley, at home to Watford, it's not a great one for Monday night football. Hence why they got Jurgen Klopp in. But Etienne Capoue is a fancy football hero so far this season, so I expect that will be why everyone's got an eye on that.
Mm.
But I fancy Watford to continue their good run at Burnley there.
Greg's looking at me. He's itching to do a Sean Dyche impression, which is world renowned.
Ginger Marino.
That literally wasn't it. I've got a poor throat today. But I think that's a bit unfair to say. There's nothing to say about this match. I think Watford are in fantastic form, come off the back of beating United, and they've got wonderful players like Roberto Pereira and also Troy Deeney, who's been it's very good. So
Hold
I think
play.
Yeah, absolutely. They've got a mix of like the kind of traditional attributes of the English players with this kind of continental flair that's been coming in. So I think the Watford project's going really well, and I also agree. I think they're gonna smash Burnley. Yeah.
Project Walter Mazzarri taking over where Kike Sanchez Flores took off. Natasha,
see, I want Burnley to win. I can't buy into them sacking Kike. I loved him. He was just really nice.
The Spanish Phil Brown,
better looking.
With
more of a natural tan.
Yeah, both of us.
Jinx.
But yeah, I just don't know if I buy into this Watford project of employing someone for one season, saying, okay, you've achieved what we've asked. Okay, see you later, get someone else in. Mm. With player-wise, they seem to keep that consistency. But I do wonder if they're just going to be floating around at the top half of the bottom half of the table for the next 3 years, not really doing anything constructively. Mm. But Burnley, who doesn't love Sean Dyche? You know, he's a ginger Mourinho.
Get that man a glass of water. Let's talk about the Champions League. Back Tuesday and Wednesday. The big tie to talk about, Greg, Dortmund versus Real Madrid. Dortmund on fire in the Bundesliga. Real had a bit of a slip-up against Las Palmas, conceded a late equaliser. The big narrative over in Spain, they're going crazy because Zidane dared to substitute Ronaldo. But it should be a really good game.
Yeah, definitely. And obviously, think back, there's been some great games between these clubs in recent years. Mm. So hoping for more. And I actually think Dortmund can almost go into this favourites. I mean, okay, they're playing at home, but I mean, look at form. Like Dortmund, I actually fancy Dortmund to win the Champions League this year. They look absolutely
you
deadly.
Fancy Dortmund to win?
Yeah, I'm going balls on the line, as Neil would like to say, in other squawker media formats. But yeah, I'm going to say that, yeah, Dortmund, my outside bet to win the Champions League. They've just got so much going forward. They've got so many interesting players that are really difficult to get a handle on. Mm. I mean, Rafael Guerrero, they signed him as a left-back this summer, and he's basically filled in Henrik Mkhitaryan's role.
Mm.
Who saw that coming? He's 3 goals, 3 assists. He's looking fantastic, and they've got far more to come out of this side. Aubameyang's only just come back into the team as well. Royce hasn't really done much yet. So, I mean, a bit like we were talking about with Spurs earlier, I think Dortmund haven't even got into gear yet, and they've already beaten two sides 6-0 this season, so let's see what happens.
Yeah, I mean, Felix, these are two clubs that have a habit of just, you know, pretty much turning up and whipping whatever sort of offered up by the division. Do you think it's going to be that simple? Do you think Dortmund are the favourites going into this? I mean, Real Madrid's Champions League record of late has been exceptional.
I agree with Greg. I think if you look at Dortmund have scored 24 goals in their last four games, and like you say, they whipped Warsaw 6-0 in their first Champions League game.
Mm.
I think Dortmund are just, they have to be applauded for their transfers in the summer. They just brought in Dembele, Guerrero, Pustelic, Moore, Roda. All of them have contributed straight away to the side.
Mm.
And yeah, I think this is going to be a great game. And I'm hoping that this will kind of kickstart that group. And obviously it's the biggest game in that group, with the other two basically not standing a chance.
Yeah. That's a fair point. Mm. They do not stand a chance. Let's talk about Atletico versus Bayern Munich. Really good tie last year, Natasha. Very, very tactical with Simeone versus Pep. But it's probably quite a different tie with Ancelotti, who's a bit more of a pragmatist and a bit more someone who's used to just get it done, just get the goals.
Yeah, I think with Ancelotti, I see a lot of talk that he's very much a cup manager.
Mm.
Like, if you want someone there to go out and win you the 12 individual games or whatever it is, then he's the guy to do that. And I think, obviously, there's a lot of confusion with Simeone, like, decreasing the length of his contract.
Mm.
Is he as committed to the project, you know? And it'll be interesting to see how the players react to that, because, you know, if you're worrying about whether your manager's going to be there, are you really giving 100%? Or are you maybe thinking, like you think he's thinking, that, you know, I'm looking for the next big offer?
Mm. Greg, I mean, it's worth mentioning the former Frank Ribery, more assists than any other player in Europe's top five leagues with 5.
Mm.
I mean, he was pretty much a write-off during the Guardiola era. I mean, he was injured the whole time, and when he came back, he really struggled to show any form, but all of a sudden, he's totally rejuvenated.
Mm. Well, I mean, you were saying there that Ancelotti is a pragmatist. He is almost like he's a player's coach. He brings the best out of the individuals, whereas Pep was obviously a systematic fellow. And Ribery didn't really appreciate Pep in many ways. They often had a few ding-dongs in the press. Whereas Ribery and Ancelotti is just a match made in heaven. Heaven.
Such a TV show.
There you go. Yeah. It's a match made on TV. on the Champions League. But anyway, I think Ancelotti, he's as we've already seen, he's bringing the best out of him again. And Ribery went on form. I feel like because he doesn't get the goals, people don't appreciate Ribery, but he is one of the most devastatingly good creative players in Europe. And I don't want to be a massive massive germaphobe here, but germophile, that's what I was going to go for.
Mm-hmm.
But I reckon Bayern are going to smash Atletico. Atletico aren't in good form. They're basically Antoine Griezmann plus 10. Mm. When Griezmann isn't firing, they don't. They've only just beaten Deportivo 1-0 at the weekend. Last year they would have probably thrashed them a bit more. They don't look ruthless, they don't look sharp. So yeah, I think Bayern are going to take them to the cleaners.
Felix, do you agree with Greg's assessment of Atletico? I mean, Griezmann is in great form, 24 goals in 2016. He's the joint top scorer in La Liga alongside Suarez. But there does seem to be a lack of the same sort of edge from Simeone's men. Has he taken this Atletico squad as far as he can?
I think that's maybe what he thinks. Like we were saying about his contract, he's clearly eyeing the exit already. Kevin Gramero was their kind of big signing in the summer and take a bit of time to bed into the new system. He set up Griezmann's goal at the weekend, but yeah, I think Bayern have got to be considered favourites. You've got Robert Lewandowski. They've got more goal threat. You've got Robert Lewandowski, but they've got lots of other players that are all...
Joshua Kimmich, he's suddenly started banging him in for midfield as well. He didn't score any goals last season, but he's got four already.
Yeah.
I think the German sides are looking the more likely, certainly
more
this
potent.
Week. Yes.
Well, before we leave you, it's time for another new fortress. Story of the week. Story time. The story I've dug out is from The Guardian. It's an interview they did with Daniel Amakachi. Remember Daniel Amakachi?
Oh, yes.
Everton and Nigerian legend. Felix is shaking his head. He's too young. He's too young. Former Everton forward Daniel Amakachi has taken over Finnish club Jalka Palasuera Hercules, the Oulu-based club, 7th in the league. They happen to have 4 Nigerian players in the squad. And from the interview... Daniel says, I arrived on a Wednesday. It was minus 38 degrees Celsius and I'd come straight from Nigeria, but I saw the facilities, met the team and felt comfortable. I decided to see it through. We're financially crippled, so can't make many transfers like the other teams, and there are other frustrations. We started the season really well, but then you've got things that you only see in Finland. Players missing games because they've already booked holidays, their friends getting married, things like that. You can't protest because you're not really playing for them. The striker had 13 goals for Nigeria and several spells as assistant coach of his national side, the Super Eagles. And he told The Guardian about his friendship with former Everton teammate Duncan Ferguson, who turned up unannounced at his wedding in Tunis in 1995, and who he describes as just a lovely, sweet guy, one of the best human beings I've ever met. Nothing like he was on the field. We remind you that Duncan Ferguson was sent to prison for headbutting someone who broke into his house.
He broke into his house, didn't he?
But he finds it okay to turn up to someone's wedding uninvited.
Yeah.
That's worse. Sweet guy.
Just a sweet bloke. Just a sweet, sweet bloke.
Yeah.
Well, that's all we've got time for this week. Thank you very much for joining us. Thank you to Felix, Greg and Natasha, who have been superb guests as always. Please follow us on Twitter, subscribe to us on iTunes, and we'll have much more Squawker Talk action this week. Greg himself is presenting a special 20-year anniversary on Arsene Wenger. Which should be fun.
Happy anniversary, Pravelf.
Had to get that in there.
The boss.
Yeah.
And we'll have our regular sort of action preview to the weekend on the Thursday. Thanks very much for joining us. Bye-bye.
Ciao.